for 50 years, my mom, 55 years, my mom taught dancing. My mom, we would go to a bar, a club or whatever, you know, for dinner or whatever. And my mom was 50 years old. She'd go on the dance floor and embarrass everybody on the floor. Like, her moves, it was so, she could just dance.
Legend.
And there's not a cell in my body that can dance.
And that's
only
not true.
Only because of my feet. My feet don't cooperate. I can play the drums. I can't play the drums with my feet. I can dance my upper body. My feet don't move. I can't, they can't. They don't. I just don't get that. So but sitting in a car, oh, man, yeah. So I dare you to try not to dance with that one. It's Wednesday. It's 8:05, and, man, things are good. Life's good. I do want to tell you about Blue Ridge Heating and Air. I don't have to tell you about how important it is right now to stay cool. I don't have to tell you how important it is right now to stay efficient with that HVAC machine and the power bills and those kind of things. Let's get it running max efficiency. Let's get a Tiger tune-up. Let's get a preventive maintenance program. Let's think about a new unit if you have to, the Armstrong unit that they sell there or the Arctic Flex unit they sell there. Let's think about getting in, and they came in and looked at my ductwork the other day. Let's look at all things, and let's look at insulation. Let's take a total approach of it to make maximum efficiency and make sure it works out all right for you there. Love our great friends at BlueRidgeHeatingAir.com. To our guest lines, because we were out last week, and it's been a minute, and I just got to catch up. Dane Young, UJSports.com. How's life, man? I feel like I just missed you.
I miss chatting with you, too, but I understand that you needed the extra travel day to New York for the Taylor and Travis wedding, and I hope you had a great time.
We did. A little superficial, but hey, you know, win in Rome, you know what I'm saying? Win in Rome. Life good? Summer good? Girls good?
Life's good. You know, we just came off of like a five-day beach trip in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and I am not a beach person, Mickey, but I do have a family that's full of beach people, so that's what we're coming off of, which means that I got a lot of indoors time watching Wimbledon with my baby niece, and I was not complaining at all, because as I was watching this yesterday, Mickey, and I know you bring me on to talk Georgia football, but I'm sitting there, and on one screen, I have 39-year-old Lionel Messi making this comeback in the World Cup. And on the other screen, I have 39-year-old Novak Djokovic that's getting into five sets with someone close to half his age. And I'm just thinking, like, this is remarkable what we're watching. And with Djokovic in particular, because he had a great line when someone asked him after the match about Lionel Messi and them doing this kind of on the same time frame. And he said, I wish I could only play 90 minutes like Lionel Messi. It's such a beautiful line. It's fantastic.
What a great line. I didn't hear that.
I'm getting to the point. I've been a Djokovic fan for a long time. I remember watching him struggle with heat when he was a teenager. I think this was around 2007, 2008, and I just loved his game. He's already the greatest men's tennis player ever. Like, that's indisputable. He's approaching best athlete ever territory for me, Mickey.
Really?
Like it's pretty special. Yeah. Like, if think about how far he's surpassed two other GOATs with Nadal and Federer, and then to still be doing this. I mean, he another couple majors at this age, and he's right there at the top of anything I've ever seen.
All right. Can he do another couple majors?
So he beat Yannick Sinner, who he'll have to play next. He did beat him in Australia, so it's going to take another Herculean effort to do that. I think the winner of that match would be the favorite in the final at Wimbledon. But, you know, even this week, Roger Federer is known as the grass court guy, and now Novak Djokovic has more Wimbledon wins than Roger Federer. So this is the combination of being elite and winning, but then also doing it for an extremely long time. And that seems to be the modern thing in sports is whether it's Tom Brady or LeBron James or Novak Djokovic, they can be better for longer, but it doesn't work that way for everyone. I mean, I just watched the Rafa Nadal documentary on Netflix, which is fantastic. Highly recommend for anyone who just wants to get into the inner brain of one of these elite athletes. His body failed him. And whatever Djokovic has done, whatever LeBron James has done, that's things that predecessors have not been able to do to that extent, at least. And maybe you can say the same for Lionel Messi, but like when I watch Messi, he plays different now. Like he's not running around the field. He's kind of picking his spots.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's the case with Djokovic a little bit too, but you just can't do that in tennis that much. Like you have to go.
Couple things there. There is, first of all, I don't know if our audience most of our audience appreciates it enough. What we're doing now in tennis is amazing. Like, it's the athleticism, the speed, the power. I mean, and that goes for every sport that's out there. But the other side of that is when you watch the LeBrons or the Bradys or the Djokovic in this case, I'm not all that – I mean, I am fascinated by their age and their bodies doing it, but I know now with science and with their nutrition and their teams they put together that I can see that. That's within my realm of understanding. I get it. Now, again, it's fascinating, but I get it. The much more fascinating part to me is that what makes Djokovic go out Tuesday – or in 2 weeks from Tuesday to get ready for the U.S. Open and go through the training he's going to go through at his age. What makes Tom Brady in a Florida heat in July go out for voluntary or OTAs? What makes those guys get up and, you know, Muhammad Ali or whatever it might be, like, I'm going to go take another beating. I'm going to go do this again. I'm putting my body through this again. Like, the mental aspect of motivating yourself to climb Everest again. Like, that's much more fascinating to me, the mind.
Well, immediately after winning against Felix Auger-Aliassime in the fifth set, Djokovic did say on court, he said, these are the moments why I keep playing tennis.
Right.
To be able to have the feeling of playing on center court and the crowd living and dying off every point. Wimbledon in particular, he's always raved about being the tournament that he dreamed about winning, and now he's done it seven times and is approaching an eighth. Or is pursuing an eighth. I guess you can't say approaching with the way that Yannick Sinner is in front of him. But regardless, yeah, the physical stuff, I'm with you. I can understand that. It's the mental side that I'm like, how do you have that level of discipline to do it this way, to be willing to go play 5 hours and 15 minutes at 39 years old? It's insane to do that. In some cases, Nadal in particular, I'm thinking with this, like, some of these high-level athletes, I think, are just enough on the autistic spectrum of, like, sure, they can lock into something in such an elite way that I can't access in that way. It's a special gift that I do think is God-given that not everyone can just go do. And it requires shutting off something in your brain and locking into something in your brain.
Well, it requires two things. I got a couple thoughts on that. A good friend of mine, who was into music, went and cut an album with his band, and this producer that's producing it for him is a highly thought of guy in the music industry, and works with another band or in his other band. But the point is, he said, this guy does this like 18 hours a day. Now, he's elite in his field, but that's all the guy thinks about all day, every day. And you mentioned it. The other part is like almost on a spectrum somewhere, somehow that's just different, and that's why it's not for everybody. But to win 24 majors in tennis like Djokovic, or to do it the way Tiger Woods, or the way that Michael Phelps, what made Michael Phelps jump in that cold pool at 5 a.m. at his age after winning that many, like to win one more, like what's going on in your mind to go train, to go lift, to go run, to do it one more time? Like, that's crazy to me.
Well, and because I can rattle off 4 or 5 examples across sports of these guys, and I just did it with that list of names of these late 30s or early 40s guys, think about how many, like Jordan Spieth comes to mind for me. For about 3 years, this guy was the prodigy of the sport, and he couldn't miss, and he was going to be, he played as well as anyone had since Tiger Woods. And then for the last decade, you really haven't seen Spieth be that part big, that much a part of the picture in high-level golf. Now, you've seen Scotty get there, too, and probably reach some of those heights. But I guess what I'm saying, it is so hard to get to the top and stay there in any of these sports. And so when you see it, I do think we're spoiled to a large extent to have so many examples of people that can do this forever. This goes into coaching, too. Nick Saban is different in this, that no one has been able to sustain in college football what Nick Saban has done. Yeah. Maybe there's a couple examples, whether it's Dabo or Kirby or Ryan Day, that approach some of that. But in my life, we've never seen anything like Nick Saban.
No, I was concerned. I want to bring this back to Georgia to a certain extent. I never liked him personally, but the one that amazed me was Krzyzewski, in that Krzyzewski, to have that level of intensity for that long in games, they would be playing UNC Charlotte, and in a December game the week after an ACC opener, and he's coaching harder in that game. I was sitting on press row right there on the court several times where Clemson was playing Duke the week after the Duke played North Carolina. And he coached harder in the Clemson game than he did the North Carolina game because he didn't have to coach the North Carolina game as hard. That's a natural motivator. Yeah. In the Clemson
game, the energy's already there.
The guy's 65 years old, and he is coaching, sweating, because he now knows this is how he has to coach this team this night. And to do it over and over and over that many years in a row, that's fascinating to me. All right, let me ask this.
I think of Billy Donovan right now, too. Like, he just took an assistant NBA job. Right. Like, this guy's been a head coach for a long time, NBA and college. Like, it's kind of a lunatic behavior to me to say, I want to stay in this grind. Maybe he just wants to be around Wimby, and that's the thing. But the fact that he jumped right back into it, same thing with James Franklin going to Virginia Tech. Like, they're all lunatics. Like, count your money and hang out a little bit, but they're not wired that way.
All right, I had worried about this a little bit with Kirby. Kirby's going into year 11. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I'd worried a little bit about it with Kirby in that it was so intense for so long, and it still is, that, and he's built differently, I feel like. You know, Saban was that way. Like, how did Saban do it that long with that kind of intensity? Is there a concern, or is Kirby Smart built that way, or would you see Kirby Smart in the next 2 or 3 or 4 years get out and do something, or would he mature and kind of mellow a little bit? I don't know. I don't know what the future holds for him.
And I'd say in the last 3 years, we've seen a slight mellowing of Kirby Smart as he's become the longest tenured head coach in the league, which wasn't the case until Mark Stoops and that transition at Kentucky. But now he's there, and he's one of the longest tenured in college football. I think he's mellowed a little bit publicly with some of the CEO stuff, but the coaching stuff is what he adores. And so you say 11 years as head coach, I'm thinking this guy hasn't done anything different since he was 23 years old.
Yeah,
I mean, he had a cup of coffee. I think it was a spring camp with the Indianapolis Colts after college. And then after that, he went to Valdosta State, and he's been coaching ever since. And so this is what he knows. This is what he does. I do think there's a point that he will hang it up and be out of it. But my sense, Mickey, is that he's going to be one that he's not going to test the NFL. He's going to coach Georgia until he's done coaching, and then he's going to be done with it. It's going to be a bit like we've seen this in college basketball with a couple of these guys, whether it's Tony Bennett or whoever it has been in the last few years, where we've seen it at Villanova. We've seen good coaches just step away from because they're tired of the CEO piece of it. Kirby Smart, Terry College of Business guy here, he gets some energy from the organizational structure of it. So I don't think that part is as testing to him as maybe it is other coaches that don't have that same kind of background. But do I think Kirby's going to be coaching Georgia for another 10 years? No, I don't.
But to maintain, I mean, again, he had those unicorns too, and they're getting better. There's a lot still to come there. But he went from 29-1 at one point, two national championships, to their last 29. This is still good, but the last 29, they're 23-6, and they're 0-2 in college football playoffs. And it's like, and 23 of those, and 23-6, he beat some good teams in there, but 23-6 is different than 29-1.
Well, Jim Donnan asked us yesterday, like he asked me and writing to both him on UGA Sports Live, is there a team in the country that you would trade their coaching and roster with right now headed into the season?
No.
Like everything all encompassed.
No.
And the way he phrased the question was simply, it was saying, Georgia's right there with everybody going into this season.
Yeah.
The only other teams that I even considered were Texas, Oregon, Notre Dame, as far as being elevated above Georgia, maybe throw Ohio State in there because of some of the offensive weapons. But that's it. That's probably your top five right there.
I would throw Ohio State in there. I think that top to bottom, 1 through 105, would I put Ohio State in there.
Roddy had a great point. Notre Dame, because of its schedule, you probably like it a little bit better than Georgia's chances to survive the 9-game SEC schedule.
That, but then I'm talking about going in and then playing because – you know, the regular season, I get all that. But I'm talking about going in and having to win 4 playoff games or 3 playoff games.
Yeah.
I think Notre Dame's built for that. I think Georgia's built for that. I think Ohio State's built for that. I think Texas's built for that. Until somebody beats them, I'm not sure Indiana. I need to see Indiana. And maybe Oregon. Maybe Miami.
Yeah, I think Oregon's in there.
but I mean, it doesn't take long to call roll in that class.
I'll tell you this: if Georgia played Notre Dame, I like C.J. Carr a lot better than I like Gunnar Stockton.
That's interesting.
And I like Gunnar Stockton, but I think C.J. Carr is potential Heisman guy this year. I really like him.
Let's talk more about that next week. Talk about UGAsports.com, and obviously a very interesting conversation you had yesterday with Coach Donnan.
Yeah, I just gave you the big tease. So he also recounted, I think it was the 1967, it was in the Astrodome, when NC State, when he was quarterbacking them, upset number 2 Houston. So if people want to hear that story and go deep in the archives of Jim Donnan, the football player, it's all there.
I love it. UGAsports.com. Tell the girls hello. Maybe we'll talk about a Djokovic 25 next week.
I'm going to go try to fix my slice on my drive. I played terrible down at the beach. So that's going to be my day.
Good luck, buddy. Hit it from the inside. Yeah. All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Dane Young, UGAsports.com. Short break. Much more. Andrew Oliphant. Speaking of straightening things out, he needs to listen to the next segment right after this.
The sports world never stops spinning. We bring order to the athletic calendar.
From sunup to sundown,
we've got you covered with the most up-to-date sports talk on the airwaves.
105.5, 97.5, The Roar.
Your upstate sports authority.
I don't know anything about flooring. I do know the one thing I only need to know about flooring, and that is Greer Flooring Center. You go there, you go to their website, you ask the questions, you get their consulting team, you learn more about all the pros and all the cons. You go to GreerFlooringCenter.com and all the products. What's the difference in luxury vinyl and hardwood and carpet and laminate and tile, and how do you care for them, and what are the pros and cons and how they installed, and what are the cost advantages, and what's the technology looking like? And so, I don't know, you're looking at tile flooring. There's a tile flooring guide on there, all right? And you can learn more about ceramic tile and porcelain tile and natural stone tile and wood look tile, and how the spacing of that goes and how the insulation goes and how durable it is and how to maintain tile. I don't know anything about that, but I do know one resource: Greer Flooring Center. In Greer and in Easley, it's GreerFlooringCenter.com.
Sizzling scores all summer long.
Your questions, your level of commitment, your level of engagement, let me say it that way. There's a collaborative effort between builder and client, between designer and client, and there's this relationship that happens there. And so, because they know what they're doing and you don't know, but you know what you want, you know what you envision, that there's always this collaborative effort and decision making and how you manage the cost and how the project works out. And so there's this constant flow, and the reason it works is A, who the people are, but B, it's one company, so you're not going back and forth between all kinds of companies. So they do all of that, and they keep you abreast at every single aspect of the project, knowing that it's going to be done on time and knowing that it's going to be done on budget. So we love that. We love the idea that this thing works, to schedule a discovery session and learn more about the Better Building Experience and why that works, why that collaboration is so important to them. Think about our great friends at Trail, the leading commercial builder in North and South Carolina. It's Trail, T-R-E-H-E-L.com, 800-319-7006. Since I missed last Wednesday, hadn't talked to him in a while, and I just hope he's doing well. Good morning, Andrew Oliphant, Director of Instruction at Katichi. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Good morning to you, Mickey.
I am. We can talk a little if you like about what we saw the last couple weeks on tour, but I'm much more interested in what I'm seeing the next 2 weeks, because we're heading to your portion across the pond, and we're at North Berwick at the Renaissance this week with the Scottish Open, and then we head over to Royal Birkdale for the British Open coming up next week. So let's talk a little bit about, have you been to North Berwick, where Mirfield and North Berwick and the Renaissance course, all that is?
Yeah, that's another sort of little locked in location. You know, if you're looking for golf vacations or places to go and play, obviously the old course and everybody gravitates towards that, but you've got these little pockets of great golf courses, and around there in Edinburgh, Mirfield, Gullen, North Berwick, Dunbar, that little area, you don't really have to travel that far. And ironically, then you move over to Southport, you know, for Birkdale, right next door is Hillside, which in my opinion is probably one of the top 2 or 3 golf courses in the world. You know, it's incredible. You know, so you got 3-4 golf courses around the Southport area that are just unbelievable. So you know, these little pockets of golf courses, and say you get a group of guys, you don't have to travel very far. You play 36 holes and wear yourself out in the evenings and go and do it again the next day.
Oh, it's just heaven, man. It's just heaven. I tell people, I did not get a chance to play Mirfield. My buddies did. Mirfield's a different experience. Let me do this one for you. Have you ever played Mirfield, by the way?
I have not played it. I've been there for the Open Championship as a actually a fan. It was probably in my younger years. I don't think I've been there as a coach, but it's a great venue.
Well, the golf course is different because it goes around in a on like a circle, and then it comes on an inner loop or whatever the circle. So you go inner loop and outer loop and all that. But at Mirfield, it's different because my buddies take off, and I knew this would be the case. But you play 18 holes in the morning. And then you shower, you put your coat and tie on, you go to the dinner, or you go to lunch. You had this, like, very formal lunch. And there's an alcoholic drink that you have to drink there with the members. And then you play 18 in the afternoon, but it's alternate shot in the afternoon. And, like, this is what they do. And it's like, what? Because no other place in the world do you do the lunch and the alternate shot afterwards. So that's pretty cool. But I'll tell people this. I think North Berwick is as awesome of a golf course as I've ever played, and it's so cool. I think it's better than the old course in that the open holes are better, and then coming back into town, it's a lot like the old course because you're coming back into this old gray town and hitting at these steeples, but I think it's better golf holes, and I think that's just it's just awesome to see. Let's talk about Lynx Golf, though, and the difference in Lynx Golf and actually what is Lynx Golf and why do we what's so special about Lynx Golf, because I think it's so much better than what we play here.
Yeah, it's the turf. You know, for number one, the ground can be firm. You know, I mean, it depends on the weather too, right? I mean, from the sun baking it out, you know, but you get these really firm, tight grass lies. You know, ball doesn't necessarily sit up like it does on the zoysia grass. You know, you're playing from a real tight lie. Lynx Golf, usually referencing the coastland, so you know, over there in Europe or UK, Lynx Golf, coastland, you got the natural sand dunes, you know, they're left fairly rugged, you know, so the motors don't go in there, they can't, right? You're not going to get in there at all. So you've got these little grass steeples all the way down the side of the coastline. And then the golf course itself will be almost sitting a little bit more at sea level. You're kind of down in the bowl of the fairways, sort of dip downwards. You know, you're sort of down out the wind a little bit. So that's Lynx Golf. You know, I grew up on a Parkland golf course. We had a sort of what I call a sister golf course, which is top 50 in the UK. It's a golf club called Silloth, and it's really good. But I jokingly say that every shot's blind. You know, it's like people say, you know, if you played it before, you and I go play there, you'd be like, where the heck am I going? You know, aim at that post out there, aim at the top of that church spire out there. You know, so you've got these blind shots over hills and mounds. You know, I think they're referencing now, the designers are calling it sunken greens. You know, you're hitting into dips and hollows, and ball can bounce all over the place. So as a player, you've got to be very patient. You've got to be a little bit lucky, you know, so you've got to sort of take the rub of the green, and it all evens out at the end of the day. But, you know, for me, you know, kind of wrapping Lynx Golf up into what is it, you know, it's the element, it's the wind, but overall what you can't replicate is that turf that they've got, you know, that sort of 200-300-year-old turf that all they've done on it is play golf, and it is fantastic.
Couple of things. In my first opportunity to play Lynx Golf, I tell people in two of the last three holes I played in one of the first rounds there, I had exactly 163 yards. And on one of them, I hit pitching wedge, and then two holes later, from 163 exactly, I hit 4-iron. And that's a great example of just how different it – and that was all wind-based or where you want to land the ball and all that kind of stuff. But that's different. And Ashby, I think you'd appreciate this story. This is a pretty good one. So I'm playing St. Andrews. I'm coming in. There's a par 5. It's 14 or 15. And maybe 15. Anyway, at the old course, as Andrew would tell you, you got to challenge the right side to have the best angles into greens. but you can hit as far left as you want because you go out one way and you come right back in the opposite direction. It's out of bounds down the right-hand side all around the golf course. And so my caddy tells me, you're coming back in this old gray town, this beautiful town with these churches have been built in the 1400s, right? And my caddy tells me, in order to have the best angle in this par five on your second shot, you've got to challenge the right-hand side. And he goes, you see the farthest steeple on the right? Oh, yeah. He said, you got to take that steeple. Well, okay. And because out of bounds on the right, in the middle of my backswing, man, I get a little scared or whatever, and I pull it 30 yards left. It's safe, but I don't have a good angle coming in. But I just pull it left. And at the fourth steeple, rather than the first steeple on the right. And my caddy says, oh, I see you changed the denominations in your backswing. I didn't have the guts to take it at the one denomination. I had to go two denominations over to do that. So, but that's the beauty of all that. Let me ask you the challenges that we might see at Burkdale in that, and we'll learn more about this next week. But I'm looking at the 14-day forecast, and there's not a drop of rain over the next 2 weeks. And a lot of that had to do with the growing seasons earlier through that. But I don't see any rain forecast. The highest forecast is a 23% chance tomorrow, but, man, over the next 10 days, we're not going to see any rain in Southport, England.
Yeah, we've seen it before in Open Championships when Tiger won at Royal Liverpool many years ago now, but I think he hit driver, once or twice during the whole tournament. You know, and he was hitting iron off the tee, and people said, well, he's hitting iron for accuracy, get it in the fairway, so on. But he was actually nine to get some spin on the golf ball, you know, so he could control his distances off the tee. You know, so when it gets baked out like that, the fairways will become literally as fast as the greens. You know, I mean, we'll see that. You know, balls will hit fair. Guys that do hit driver, in all honesty, they can't control the distance. You know, these guys now can carry it 300 plus. And if they've got it on a low trajectory, that thing's going to hit the ground and just, you know, they don't know how far it's going to go. Could run 50, could run 70 yards. It's going to stop when it stops. So we may see some driving irons. We may see the Tiger-esque sort of spin the ball, hold the fairways, give themselves the yardage that they want to the pin. We could see the bombers just flat out drive these par fours and make par fives look a little bit silly. You know, I mean, they could be hitting wedges into par fives. So, you know, Burkdale's got good defense. You know, it's one of the longer links golf courses. So, you know, if they don't get any rain, hopefully they get a little bit of a breeze, you know, I mean, off the Irish Sea there. So, just to protect it. Otherwise, you know, anything could happen.
I'm going to leave you with this because you've been Americanized with us, thank goodness, on this side of the pond. But I'm going to leave you with this. And I would encourage all golf professionals, all golf course owners, all golf course general managers, give me 30 seconds here. And Ashby, I'll send you this picture. And Andrew, I'll send you this picture as well. But my buddy sent this picture of yesterday to me. And it's a picture of me this time last year in North Berwick. Right outside. Now, again, this is a top 15 golf course in the world, top 20 golf course in the world, right? And it's private, but they do allow outside play, you know, you pay a bunch of money. Anyway, right outside of the main clubhouse, there's a sign there, and it says, the North Berwick Golf Club at West Links. And then it says, your green fee ticket entitles you to become a temporary membership to the North Berwick Golf Club, where you will be made welcome by the members. And so many times, that's the end of the sign, by the way, so many times here in this country, we have elitism, we have this exclusive deal, and we feel unwelcomed, and feel like this air in golf. And yet, I think that's an awesome, it's my favorite sign in all of golf, that you will be welcomed as a member. It's a temporary deal. Once you're 18 holes up, you're not a member anymore. But today you're a member. You know, today you're a member, and you're going to be welcomed as a member, and our members are going to treat you that way, and they did, and our staff's going to treat you that way, and I did. And I think a lot of American golf, a lot of golf courses all over the world could learn a very valuable lesson from that. Very cool stuff. With that said, Andrew, tell me about getting in touch with you and getting some lessons and get some help and making this beautiful game much more enjoyable.
Yeah, the best way is andrew@katichi.com. We've got a lot going on, obviously junior camps that I'm kind of getting through at the moment. We've got a few more weeks because they end up going back to school pretty, it seems like earlier every year, but we've got, still got space in the next coming few weeks of junior golf camps, and I've got some putter fitting stuff going on with Ping, you know, so, you know, it's coming down, trying to balance a little bit of the outdoor heat and using the indoor facility that we've got here with the Sam Putt Lab, and, you know, getting the opportunity to stay indoors and hit using the TrackMan unit, you know, the simulator, and just finding that balance of crazy afternoon heat and sort of staying indoors in the air conditioning. So still got lots going on and staying busy. And like I said, the best way of getting hold of me is andrew@katichi.com.
Do that for sure. That Ping putter is pretty hot right now. Wyndham Clark made a bunch of putts to win a U.S. Open with it. Hey, have a great week, buddy. Let's preview the world's next major at when we visit next week.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks again, Mickey.
I do too. Andrew Oliphant, get the British Open coming up next week. Short break. We do have time for a phone call or two. I know we've had a bunch of guests today, so let's do that. I also have a pre-show thought that we'll go into with Ashby and I. Can't wait. Final segment right after this.
If you're online, you've got the Roar at your fingertips. From a beach and valley to the Rocky Mountains.
Hey, one thing. I want to go back to Daryl's phone call and get your thoughts on this. Ashby, the Eagles talked about, like, there's always a little bit of jitter. Arnold Palmer talked about jitters on the first tee. Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, jitters on the first tee. The Eagles talked about it like that pre, that's why they did their deal there, to get it all out there. And I got to tell you this, there's not 28 years of doing this show, and I don't know how many. Let's do some math here. There's still not, it's not, jitters is not the right word.
Do you feel adrenaline?
Adrenaline's not the right word. The thought, though, is that anxiety might be a little word. I don't have any anxiety about most of my life. I'm very, very blessed not to have. I have people in my life that do have anxiety, have panic attacks, anxiety stuff. No, and that's just debilitating and terrible. And I pray for them, and that's just awful. With that said, there's a what if. I used to have this anxiety of like, what if the equipment went wrong? What if the signal goes out? Oh my God! And I can't control any of that, so I got over that. The next anxiety that I had for probably the middle 10 years was, what if I just run out of stuff to talk about? But that's gone now, because the sports world is so small that Andrew and I want to talk Georgia football. We talk about Djokovic, right? Like, there's just enough now. World Cup now. I mean, USA hockey, we did that one. Were you with me when USA hockey was that was an Olympics? You were with me then? My thing that was, hey, man, you might be having a bad day. You might feel this way about politics. You might feel whatever, but not today, man. You're not going to take away my joy today.
Come on.
The Monday after that USA Olympic hockey goal and the gold medal, the golden goal, was not today. Today, I am proud. Today, that's one of my favorite shows ever. But the point there was is that there's enough going on now that I just don't have the nerves. Not nerves, that's not right. This, you know, what's that 1% chance? Uh-oh, things aren't going to go well today. Where are you, like, before a show starts? And now you got the equipment down. The equipment is an anxiety stressor, right? Like,
yeah.
Knowing what button to push and when and all that, that's one thing. Content-wise, when you do your own show, is there butterflies or anxiety or nerves or what? Is there anything?
Yes. When I started doing this, the equipment was the big thing.
Right.
Just because, naturally, I'm not the most tech-savvy person to ever exist. When I was doing my own show, I'd get nervous right before.
Yeah.
And for about the first five-ish minutes, my mom would listen. And because she knows me so well, she would know I was nervous listening. Then I'd settle in and I'd be fine.
Right.
But I feel like the more I've done it, the more I've done anything, it's gotten easier. And that's practice, and that's life.
Yeah.
But definitely still, like, I think it's healthy to have a little bit of something, you know?
A little bit. That, and that's what those guys talked about. Because you got a little skin in the game. I just figured it out, 7,000 shows.
Mickey.
So, and now that's 250 a year. So that's taking 2 weeks off, and probably not quite that for 20 years, 7,000. With that said, I love this from Lake Murray Michael said, my dad's a Methodist minister for nearly 50 years, and he said he hardly got any sleep Saturday night before he preached on Sunday morning because he was one of the best preachers and storytellers I ever heard. And so, I mean, if Jack Nicklaus can feel it, if Tiger Woods can feel it, if a preacher for 50 years can feel it, yeah, you got some skin in the game. You're invested in it. You want it to go well. And so you got a little bit anxiety is not the right word. Jitters, butterflies, and not nerves. There's a peace at times, too. I've done three or four eulogies now. A bunch of speaking engagements. And I will tell you this about speaking engagements. Speaking in person is different than radio. Like with Red saying, I'm going to get to Red here in a minute. There's a peace that comes over you when you get feedback visually. You can tell whether an audience is engaged or not in person. You can look in their eyes. Are they looking at their phones? Are they yawning? Are they looking at you? You can tell, are they on the edge of their seat for the next word? So speaking in person, and I've done it, was blessed enough to host Tigerama 3 years in a row. And that's 10,000 people. You can tell the energy when you're in person somewhere. On the radio, you and I look at each other, and you got other stuff going on. I can't tell, like, sometimes you look at it like, what's the next part of the story? Yeah, I can't wait for it. Sometimes you're answering the phone over there, and I'm wondering, like, is this landing? Is this plane landing right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
So radio, there's a little bit of that, right? Whereas there are performers who say this, that when there's certain parts of the show, I want the lights on, those arena lights on, to see the crowd. Are they dancing? Are they clapping? Are they into it? Sometimes, you know, you get that dark light down, whether down light, whatever you call it, where you can't see a lot of the crowd. Like, is this thing landing right now? That's okay. Interesting.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it's harder, because you've done both, and you just alluded to Tigerama. What do you think? Do you think it's easier when you have a crowd of people and you can physically tell?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, it's much easier. You got to remind yourself on radio sometimes, I'm not talking to one person. I'm talking to, in our case, thank goodness. Our general manager told me yesterday about numbers, or talk about what percentage listen online and all that stuff. Like, man, we are blessed to have this many people listening. Like, it's tens of thousands of people, which is great. With that said, you just don't know how. I mean, you can tell text line wise, but even then, we'll get 250 texts a day. But that's not out of 50,000 people listening, 70,000 people listening, whatever. That's you got 200 out of that. That's just anecdotal based. That's not statistically viable information, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So you don't know, but if you're speaking in front of a crowd of 20 or 20,000, you can look out and see what's their face look like. What are their facial clues or eye clues or body language or clapping or into it? Are they, you know, you can tell. It's easier. It's much easier to do it in person than it's doing on radio.
I think you may be in the minority of people that feel that way. That's so interesting.
You can adjust.
True.
Pace-wise, I talk very fast a lot of times. But pace-wise, sometimes I look at the audience and they're like, they look like they're confused. I'm like, okay, Mickey, slow down. Or if the energy, if the room is dropping a little bit, well, interject something funny here. You can tell at a funeral if it's getting too heavy, which is automatically heavy. Lighten it up with a great story about someone. You can tell by the body language in the fan. That's easy. That's so easy to do. You play off of that. On the radio, I don't know. Texas, Mickey, love your show. You can never leave. Well, I don't want to.
Agree.
Just make sure that they don't fire me.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what I do this all the time. How long have you been doing radio, Mickey? 28 years. Can't believe they haven't fired me yet. Can't believe they've not fired me.
7,000 shows. That's pretty incredible.
That's assuming 250 a year, which is, yeah, it's close. It's close. How about that?
It's pretty awesome.
Probably like 1,000 good ones. 654 Roar, Pratt Injury phone lines. My good friend Red Martin. Good morning, buddy. How you doing? Hadn't talked to you in a couple of days.
Yeah, Mickey, it's, I tell you, I was telling Ashby early, you know, I'm a crier. You know that, Mickey.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you.
It's a heavy dew outside. You're going to be crying if it's a little humid today. Yeah, he's going to be crying today. Yeah.
On Facebook, they give you memories. And about 10 years ago, I had a memory pop up yesterday. Well, it was late last night, and it was something I was going through. And I remember that I was sitting in a crack house 10 years ago trying to kill myself, trying to figure out a way to kill myself, do so much drinking and drugging that I could just die. And this morning when I woke up and I looked back across the bed and I have London and Cassandra and Sam laying there, and I'm just in tears because I wish the world could see how good God is. Ooh. Just in my life alone. Because you take a man like me who I woke up every day mad at God because he woke me up. And now he's allowed me to wake up to this beautiful sight where I have these beautiful people that are laying in the bed and he's allowing me to experience this. And, you know, none of this is possible, Mickey. And I know you just keep saying it, but without the roar, let me tell you, Mickey.
Let me tell you.
Don't get messages. Hold on, Mickey. Right. Hold on. We don't get messages from Tad Dixon. Tad Dixon, who messaged me the other day and said, hey, your story has inspired me and my wife to feed the homeless in Anderson.
There you go.
We don't get Marie and Kevin and their three kids come out, Javon and Jake and Hampton.
Aren't they great?
Come out and fix the meal for a Sunday. And that's, Mickey, that phone call between me and you that day, I cry about that all the time, because if that phone call don't go through, we're not living this life that I'm living today.
That phone call changed
me
too.
And Cassandra. So,
well, let me say this. So the idea how you've changed through this, I remember one time you telling me that you're in prison and you steal the biggest, baddest, toughest guys, whatever, and the guy says, man, I'm going to kill you. And you go, oh, man, that ain't a threat to me. Please. Like, I want you to. And you're mad at God when he wakes you up the next day. And now you wake up and you see Cassandra and Sam and you go, thank you, God, for letting me wake up today.
Yeah.
What? That's a little polarity, a little 180 turnaround there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And I could have, nobody could write this story, Mickey, because they would sell it short.
Somebody better write it to kind of get it on paper and to get it in a book and to get it in a movie.
God's the only person that could wrote this story.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
And I love Daryl's phone call. I wish he'd call in every day.
Me too. We need more of him, more of you. Hey, I got to run, man. I love you. Let's talk soon. Tell everybody hello. Sure. SundayDinnerWithATwist.org. Brad, he's at allset.com. Brad'sinsurance.com. 2923001. Brad'sinsetallset.com. Get in touch with him. He can certainly help you out. And then EricNewton.com. Great real estate guy, no doubt. The best in the business in Clemson. EricNewton.com. Tiger-Properties.com. Ashby, 10 seconds, 2 minute drill. You got anything at all? Someone wants to know, when's Ashby's show coming back?
This fall, I believe.
Okay.
Football season action.
We'll get here because I need that again for sure. Thank you so much. Glad to have you back.
I'm so happy to be back.
We'll
great
be
show.
Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait.
Let's
gonna be
do
awesome.
It.
Let me thank Dr. Martin and Dane Young and Andrew Oliphant and Ashby. Up next, Sam and Facts and Friends. Have a wonderful Thursday or Wednesday. Most important, tune in tomorrow. That's when we'll see it right here on the radio.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. W8.